Welcome to Arguments of a Redneck and a Pastor.
Howdy from the redneck.
Hello from the pastor.
All right, y'all, let's see. How's it going today, Pastor?
It's been a pretty good day. I mean, it's one of those things where today, this week has just seemed like it's never ending, but it's Sunday. I'm happy to be have an afternoon off, you know, after church service, of course, and just get to spend some time with my family. How about you? How's it going for you, Redneck?
Not too bad. Had a nice day off, you know, just kind of from the grind of the Monday to Friday. I would say a 9 to 5, but I am not a morning person by any means. So, I mean, I'm a second shifter. I work those evenings, so I'm definitely not a 9 to 5er, but definitely a nice day off and kind of regretting eventually I've got to get out to the garage and work on my hunk of junk Chevy that I got out there.
Yeah, you got to keep those things running nice.
Yeah, I mean, so, Redneck's got to have his truck, even if it goes down the road and just goes blah, 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 the whole time.
So I've got to tell you, I did probably the most redneck thing I've ever done in my life on Saturday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I went shopping at a thrift store, and they had a chainsaw there for $30, and I had my son with me, and I've been trying to do some cleaning up behind, we have a fence at our house, so behind that fence, I've been trying to do some cleanup, and there's a whole bunch of trees and stuff. So I was like, hey, that would come in really handy when I'm like bringing these, you know, these trees over and cutting them up. And of course, we're doing like, you know, little fires and doing marshmallows and s'mores and stuff. And my son was in his stroller because I frankly didn't want to chase him around the store going, no, don't touch that. Don't touch that. Stop that. And so right. I'm pushing my son out to the car, a chainsaw under the carrier thing. And I was like, have I ever seen anything more redneck in my life? And then I thought about you and I was like, oh, I'm safe.
Yeah. I mean, all you got to do is look at the back of my Chevy Blazer and you'll know that it screams redneck. Actually, it was pretty funny. I was walking into Come and Go the other day and there's a lady walking past me. I don't know if she thought it was an insult, but all I heard out of her mouth was redneck as she walked past me, and I was like, yes, ma'am, I am.
Thank you. Yeah. Right. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's nice to be noticed once in a while.
It's like, it's a badge of honor for me. Like,
wait, maybe you were recognized for the first time ever in your life.
Right. I mean, maybe she's one of the five people who have listened to us so far.
I mean, maybe. Maybe she's a big redneck fan.
Man.
So one thing we talked about last time is wanting to make sure that we are wanting to bring on the facts as much as we can. And last week, I made a mistake with the COVID vaccine 19 vaccinations that we were talking about. And I was under the impression that the Moderna virus was also the vaccine where they took a little bit of the dead virus and injected you. That is incorrect. It is also using the mRNA. That's just a lot harder to say than it should be. But
yes, it is.
They're
is
also
sure.
using this right. They're also using this new technology. So I just wanted to clarify that. So if this is your first time listening, you don't have to worry about it. But if you heard our last episode and you're like, wait a second, that doesn't seem right. It's because it wasn't. I was wrong.
Yeah, it's all good. And we're willing to correct ourselves. And if you think we're wrong, send us an email there at redneckpastorpod@gmail.com. I mean, we're always, or podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely to correct ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, we're always wanting to make sure that we're not putting any false information out there. And like we said before, this podcast is more about our opinions and more about us being goofy. But if we're putting wrong information out there, we want to make sure we're correcting it. So,
exactly.
But anyway, going on from that, speaking of COVID-19 vaccinations, I thought this was a timely story to go into. Because this next week, matter of fact, I believe one of the meetings is tomorrow for the FDA to approve the Pfizer vaccine. It's an emergency meeting. They are going to be deciding of whether it's safe. They're going to be looking at studies. They're going to be doing a whole lot of things that I don't understand because I'm not a chemist or a bioengineer or whatever it is that they are. But I can tell you they're going to make some big decisions for us right now. I know last time you talked about how you're not going to be taking this vaccine, which is your prerogative again, like we've said. But what is exciting is that they're saying as early as the 14th, December 14th, there could be up to 100 million doses coming to the U.S. And this is, it's really interesting. So there's a few questions that go with this and what makes this interesting. And I think the first thing that kind of makes this interesting is who will be the first to be vaccinated, right? So there's a whole bunch of states who are asking this question now. I believe there's actually a couple states who have said they won't be accepting the vaccine to start with. So that's really interesting to me. And I'm not sure about that. I believe New York was one of them that was saying that they would not allow the vaccine to come into their state right away. But I haven't done a whole lot of research on that. So again, if you know the right answer, email us at redneckpastorpodcast@gmail.com. But all that to say, now all these states are having to make decisions on who will be the first to be vaccinated.
Yeah, that definitely makes it hard. I do know New York was one of those. I know there was some issues between Trump and Governor Andrew Cuomo there in New York City. And I knew, I know New York being like kind of like Illinois there, where Chicago, you know, controls most of the rest of it. New York City's, a lot the same with New York. And so I've seen Cuomo have a lot of tit for tat back and forth, but it was more of an issue just of the two of them back and forth than it was the state itself saying it. As far as what I've read, and again, I could be wrong there. I mean, but that's what I've read as far as in the news and a couple of the different podcasts and news sources I've listened to.
Yeah, and I know I watched Trump talk about this Operation Warp Speed at one point. He was talking about, like, they're hoping they can get New York on board and everything, which is, I mean, if Trump really means that from the sincerity of his heart, that's awesome. If he's just doing it to save face, then come on, man, just say what you mean. You're probably not going to be the president next year anyway, so...
I mean, that's all still up in the air. I mean, now, the way it's looking with all those lawsuits, I mean, clearly it's not going his way.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we could probably talk about that forever, but I really want to focus on this COVID vaccine. But so, I mean, the reality of the situation is that states are now really having to decide who they're going to vaccinate first, which is, to a lot of people, obvious, but to some people, not so much, right? So, like, a lot of states are doing what the CDC is. My guess is a lot of states will do what the CDC has recommended, which will be, you know, your first responders and medical personnel and then your nursing home residents. But there's a lot of places that are saying 100 million doses won't be enough to start with. And that's really interesting because, I mean, so 100 million doses really means 50 million people because the vaccine is in two doses. So you have to get one shot and then get another one later. So the reality is anytime you're talking about the vaccine and the amount of doses, you almost have to cut the amount of people that's going to treat in half, right? So you have 100 million doses. Right. So now you have 50 million people are going to be vaccinated. There are 330 million people in the U.S., so most of the country still will not be vaccinated for this anytime soon, right? They're saying this will be as early as December 14th. That could be. And I know the U.S. has secured the next, like, 500 million doses. But still, even with that, with the 30 million – or, the, excuse me, the 50 million we're getting now, the 250 million that we're getting, you're still missing 30 million people. You're missing, like, essentially the state, an entire, like, and not like I got called out for picking on South Dakota, so I won't do it this again. Not like Nebraska or, you know, Wyoming state. You're talking like a significant size state like California or New York, an entire state will not be vaccinated because there's just not enough. And I'm sure, I know that's not actually how it's going to work. They're not going to be like, oh, you know, California doesn't get it because they don't, you know. No, that's not how it's going to work.
It is California. Giving that
comparison. Oh, come on now. California just loves you too.
Yeah, that's true. It takes all of us to make the world go around. That's for sure.
That's right. It takes everybody on every different walks of life to make the world go around. But anyway, so I wanted to get your thoughts on some of that because I know you probably have some strong opinions on a lot of that. And I was just more curious as to what you had to say.
So as far as the who to be vaccinated first, if we're looking at a virus like that, like I can agree with what they're looking at as far as specifically digging into the frontline workers and the people like the nursing homes and the people in those kind of situations, because those are actually, you know, the most vulnerable people. And those who are immunocompromised are also the ones that I think should be ones to get it first, which I can completely agree. And I have no problem with vaccines. Like that's the thing is I want it to be like, no, that's not the thing is the vaccine. It's issue is the science is so new with it that I have a hard time with some of that. I'm not saying that, you know, if it comes down to it and it's proven that this is the only way to do whatever, that I won't take it and, you know, given the right information that, you know, I won't be okay with it if I have the right data and subset of everything put in front of me. But that's it. I just have to have that data subset put in front of me so that then I can see, you know, look, this is how it's going to affect my body. And right now we just don't have enough of those. On the dosage side, I'm just going to actually, since we're on this topic, and this is one of my stories as well, you're talking about the supply of the vaccine, how we're really, since it is two doses, we're looking at separating out that. So you're really looking at only half of the people who will be able to be vaccinated because they have to make sure you get both doses. The big issue I did see coming out of the New York Post was that they're having issues actually with some of the supply line for the Pfizer side. And they're actually, this was on the 3rd that this article of this month here in December. And they're only expect to ship out half of the COVID-19 vaccine doses it initially had planned this year after running into a supply chain problem. The company said its initial projection of distributing 100 million doses worldwide by the end of the year has now been reduced to 50 million. So not only are we looking at that supply issue, but so like, yeah, not only is Pfizer one of the two companies that are being pushed for this emergency approval meeting that they're doing. But the thing is they're also looking at supply chain issues for some of these vaccines. And one of the things, when you look at it, it was saying that the scaling up of the raw material supply chain took longer than expected. And it's important to highlight that the outcome of the clinical trial was somewhat later than the initial projection. Essentially telling people, you know, despite that the setback here, it's saying the company said it's still on track to roll out more than a billion doses worldwide. So, you know, they're still on track to roll out a lot of these, but they are way behind. Right. So we're looking at this vaccine and people are really, really excited about it. But I do want to warn people, like, they've had some issues. And there's also, I don't have the article directly, but I was listening to a couple of the news sources earlier today, and they were talking that there's looking at three potential countries that have been targeting and trying to cyber hack into the cold storage facilities that are storing these specific doses of this vaccine. And so the problem with that is they're looking at trying to figure it out. And it was actually an IBM team that found this and warned the NSA to get in there and, hey, we need to watch these so we don't end up having even more issues with these vaccines.
Yeah, so I mean, I did want to correct, again, all about accuracy here. Actually, on the 8th, so it'd be Tuesday, is when the White House is holding the summit. The FDA will actually approve it on the 10th, which you're talking, you know, it's Thursday. So early as Thursday, we can roll, and then by next week, they could be rolling these vaccines out. You did bring up an interesting point, though. The storage of the vaccine has to be at negative 70 degrees Celsius, which is cold. Like, freezing happens at 0 degrees Celsius, you know, or 32 degrees Fahrenheit. So for some reference, like, that is, let's just say, even if you're from South Dakota, Minnesota, North Dakota, negative 70 degrees Celsius is colder than you're used to.
Oh, right, exactly. And that's the thing is yeah, it is. When you're talking cold, you mean cold.
Right. Well, I mean, so you're talking, if you're a Fahrenheit person, like, you know, like we are here in the U.S., that's negative 94 degrees Fahrenheit. That is, it has to be a little chilly in there. I would venture to say even you would not be comfortable in that.
Yeah, and my wife likes to call me a polar bear, so I mean, even a polar bear would not be so comfortable in that.
Right. Santa's elves are quitting if it gets that cold, man.
They're going on strike and going to the South Pole.
That's right. This North Pole stuff is for the birds.
Oh, sorry, man. We're definitely coming up on Christmas season making Christmas jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, I figured it was about time to do a couple. But anyway, so the vaccine, while it has some problems, I think they've done a lot of to ensure that it's not, they've done as much as they can, I think, to ensure that they're not going to run into these problems. Outside of the supply chain, I don't know. I mean, if you're talking, so they're only going to come up with 50 million doses. That's 25 million people. So that's even less than you're talking about, right? So there are 50 states. So if you're going to distribute it, I'm sure they're going to do something besides just spreading it across, you know, the U.S. But you're talking, that's like 500,000 doses for every state. Now, again, if you live in Wyoming, you'll be fine.
Right.
Because I don't even believe there's 500,000 people in Wyoming. Or might be. I could be wrong. I'm sorry if anyone's listening from Wyoming. We love you. Devil's Tower is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But in all honesty, like, if you're in a smaller state like Wyoming, South Dakota, North Dakota, you know, I think you're talking probably Nebraska, Iowa, those smaller states, yeah, you'll be a little, I know Nebraska and Iowa have a little bit larger populations, but you'll be a little on the okay side. But these states like Texas, Florida,
yep.
California, New York,
Michigan.
Pennsylvania, Michigan, yeah, all these states who have these larger populations, and even Illinois, like,
yep.
You think, I can almost guarantee most of the, I shouldn't say I can almost guarantee, they're going to have to do something like per capita or something, I almost bet is what they're going to have to do. Because, I mean, you're talking, even within the state, let's just look at the little section of the U.S. There's Illinois. Like, most of those doses, unfortunately, are probably needed in Chicago, right? Or the Chicago suburbs, because the most of the state is in that area. Now, I'm not saying the rest of the state doesn't need it. Lord Jesus, I'm not saying the rest of the state doesn't need it. What I am saying is that, like, per capita, you're going to have to look at something there.
Well, yeah, and if you look at those areas, the thing is in those areas, you have a higher density of population. And those higher density of population areas, things that are this airborne and stuff can spread a lot faster because you're a lot more packed on top of each other. Because literally, those apartment buildings are, you know, one apartment building on top of another, on top of another, on top of another in downtown Chicago.
Right.
And everybody just lives stacked on top of each other. So it just spreads like crazy. So, you know, I do agree that it is a beautiful thing that we would put it to those first to try to help slow down a little bit of the issues in those more metropolis areas.
Right, because if you get it to the big cities, then everything kind of will kind of slow down from there. Now, I'm not saying it'll be an end-all, and I'm not saying everything will slow down. What I am saying is the biggest issues come where you have the most people, right? And that's the bigger cities. We lived in Chicago, and we moved to Chicago from a little town in Iowa, and I constantly made the joke, there are more people in one city block in Chicago than in the entire city I lived in, right? That's not necessarily an over-exaggeration. The town that we lived in had 10,000 people. There were literally probably more people in one city block in Chicago than there were in the entire city that we lived in. Like, Chicago's what, like 3 million people or something like that?
So it's just,
and Chicago's not even like the biggest city in the U.S. You're still talking L.A. is bigger than Chicago, and New York is bigger than L.A. So in those cities, it's going to be even more of an issue.
Right. Well, and then, and then you had just poor judgment as far as some of the calls and stuff. Like, you look in New York with Governor Cuomo sending the sick patients back to the nursing homes. Like, at the beginning of this, he just sent them right back in. Like, okay, if we know this disease is so deadly to the elderly, why are we sending them back?
Well, I don't think they knew. So what I'm thinking probably happened, and I could be wrong again. I'm more than willing to admit when I am. But, like, the thing is, I don't think at the beginning of this, they probably didn't know. And now if they're sending them back, it's probably because they don't have anywhere else for them to go. Like,
right. Oh, they're talking, it's, you know, crazy.
Yeah, they're talking hospitals are literally, like, running out of space. And
so with that, some of that, I have an issue with them saying hospitals are running out of space. Like, I understand that they have to treat these cases in a certain way and make sure that everything is a certain way and have the staff for a certain, you know, I understand that. But part of the issue with the space in hospitals is when you dig into some of the government regulations that limits that. So part of that is our government needs to rail back some of their regulations and let the hospitals do what the hospitals need to do to have these beds. Because the problem is they limit with what they call a certificate of need. If you can't show that you have a need for X amount of beds for, you know, whatever issue, you can't have them.
Okay. While I don't know a whole lot about that, I also think, like, you have to realize a lot of these hospitals, should they be equipped to handle as much as we're handling them or sending to them, right? Because hypothetically, right? So let's say your hospital's certificate of need or whatever that would be has 4 beds for somebody who had a chainsaw accident, bringing back from, you know, and this is, again, this is an extreme example. This is not something like I'm saying is a legit thing. But they have four beds for people chainsaw accidents. You go to Backwoods, Iowa, you'd better have more beds than 3 for chainsaw accidents, you know? I'm mostly joking, but, like, okay, so what do you do with the 5th guy who comes in?
Right. And see, that's where I have an issue with it, is the thing is, like, I understand we have to do what we need to do to protect the staff at these hospitals and make sure that they have the proper PPE and all of that. The issue is if we don't have the room in this hospital and the staff, and we have to turn this person away to the next hospital, and then they're having to travel, and it's causing more issues, and it's just because our regulations will get this huge fine, and, you know, and that's where I have an issue with, when the regulations step in the way of some of these things.
Yeah, but, like, at the same time, you also don't want, so if your hospital can only realistically handle, and I keep going back to the stupid
chainsaw,
you know, chainsaw, but, like, if your hospital can only handle 4 chainsaw accidents, right? That 5th one would probably be better off going to a different hospital. I know the regulations and things you're, like, and that's honestly why they have those regulations, is because, like, they're looking at all these things and they're saying, okay, we know what they can realistically handle. Nobody knew what COVID-19 we could realistically handle with, right? It's just nobody knew that. So this is my argument here is twofold, right? One, those things can protect hospitals from becoming overwhelmed with things that they cannot realistically handle. The other thing that you go into, yeah, I agree. Nobody knew what's going on with COVID, and yeah, should they have loosened up a little on those restrictions or like waived them for COVID-19 patients? Because I mean, you're talking COVID-19 patients. Yeah, they need a lot of attention, but at the same time, maybe not as much as somebody who is in other circumstances. And I won't go into that because I'm not a doctor and I don't know. Right. But, you know, I'm clearly not educated or not well informed enough to compare it to whatever. But like, those regulations, I truly there to believe to protect hospitals to create a better
right. Well, and hospital. That's what they were originally intended for, which and I agree, and the intention behind them is good. The problem is there's so many other red tapes and stuff, which we won't get into all of that because we don't have, you know, I don't have 10 hours to have to read up on everything before I dig into this because right. all of that, you know, the red tape that's into it. But I know like there's ways that people can stop, you know, if your competitors can come in there and stop your certificate of need to make sure say that, oh, they don't need this. And so it becomes not that that's happening right now, but it's happened right. in the past with other things. And so the problem is those get in the way with that. But I mean,
yeah,
I'm not going to keep dragging on that. Cause like I said, I'll just keep mumbling on and we'll just end up talking about that all night.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been talking about COVID-19 for a little while here, but moral of the story is there might be a light at the end of this tunnel. Might be a little further than we initially expected, but there's a light. Keep looking to that. And I'm going to keep praying that this vaccine is no side effects and is great. Because like I said last time, even if it means I'm growing a third arm, it just means I can eat my, my Cheetos faster. So
that's the thing is I'm not against taking it. And I will once there's more science behind it. My thing is I just need more evidence. That's the big thing is, you know, we have my conspiracy corner and, you know, I like to get into some of those conspiracy theories, but I'm not one of those people who is like, oh, this is the gospel conspiracy theory. This is the way it is.
Right. You're not one of those lizard people, you know, they're lizard. Living in the tunnels and
right. Yeah. They're going to eat us all. Nom nom noms.
Yeah. So I have another story that's really interesting to me, and this one is going to be highly controversial to a lot of different people. But there was a judge. Now I don't know how the English court system works. I'm sure it's in my world it's set up similar to ours. It could be completely different. If it's different and I just slept through that in rural history, let us know at redneckpastorpodcast@gmail.com. but there is this story that I got from BBC that's talking about a court is made a ruling that nobody under the age of 16 can consent to puberty blockers in the UK, as well as some 16-year-olds. And I believe that still, matter of fact, it even says, even for 16, 17-year-olds, the ruling says it may be appropriate to involve the courts in the decision. And what my guess is here, and just from reading the article, my understanding is what essentially when they're trying to do these puberty blocker things, so when people are deciding to become transgender or, you know, transition, that they, if they're under the age of 16, the court, or really, from this article, if they're under the age of 18, the court has to be involved or is appropriate for the court to be involved. I saw this and I read the whole thing, and there's one person, I can't say what her or his, their gender is because I read the article several times, but I just never quite picked up on that of whether they identified as a male, female, or in between. I don't know.
Right.
All that to say, she pretty much said, like, she thought this was a good thing because when she, I guess she was 16, she ended up having been put on puberty blockers, and he or she, again, I'm sorry, I don't recall, but ended up being put on puberty blockers and then ended up regretting that decision because she felt like she made the wrong decision for the rest of her life. But because she was 16, or he was 16, and went through these changes already, like, there was nothing they could do, or they, like, she'd already made these, he or she had made these changes to her body, and there was nothing they could do to reverse it, you know? So with that, like, it brings up the question, it brings up several things. One, in the U.S., this is more prevalent today than it ever would have been, or ever has been, really. But this article kind of raises the question, should children 16 be allowed to essentially consent for any medical treatments, but especially for things such as puberty blockers or gender reassignment or whatever it would be? Should children under the age of 16 or 16 and under be able to make that decision? And see, I have a hard time with letting kids do that, right? And here's why I say that, because we talk about, and when I say kids, I mean anyone under the age of 18, especially a decision like this, I have a hard time with, just because you talk about kids in starting college changing their majors on an average like at least five or six times, right? Like, you're talking about, I mean, I changed my major like three different times. I didn't know I was going to be a pastor. I was going to go to school to be an accountant. And then I was going to study psychology. And then I was going to study, ended on youth and family ministries, right? Like, I had no idea what I was going to do when I was 16, 17 years old. Especially not until I would say I was about 22, 23, and I finally figured out what direction my life was headed, right? And they're bringing this question, and they're letting, and kudos to the UK for having the courts involved with this, in my opinion, again. Like, if the courts are involved and informed decisions are being made and parents are allowed to speak up on behalf of their kids or be able to speak up on behalf of themselves for their kids, you know, or I said that weird, I'm sorry. Essentially, if parents are allowed to speak up on behalf of their kids, and the courts are going to make a decision, I mean, that's at least a good step in the right direction, in my opinion. If that's really what this is all about, again, I could be misreading it. And if you're like, know more about the situation, please seriously let us know. We want to know. But
so
what's your thought?
I do have a couple of thoughts on that. As far as the age, it makes it kind of a hard thing, because the problem is age can be a very subjective thing. Because if you look, there's people who are younger who can have a lot more maturity in their life, who grow up a lot faster. Oh, for sure. I'm not saying that it makes, you know, a huge, you know, whatever as far as, you know, whether or not they should be legally themselves to consent. The issue becomes, especially here in the United States, where, you know, the traditional family, if you want to call it that, is not necessarily as prevalent. So the problem is in the UK, I'm never for government intervention. You know, I'm very much a libertarian, and I will say I want the government out of my life. If, you know, I don't want them to mess with me, you know, as long as I'm not messing with somebody else, they don't need to mess with me. But that's right. My personal feelings. So the thing is I don't think necessarily the courts should be involved, because the problem is when you get the court involved, then it's just another element to make this even more convoluted and make it even more of a stressful decision. And stressful decisions are never necessarily good decisions. And okay. you add a whole nother element on top of that. I do agree that it is something that should be between the parents, the child's doctor, and the child themselves, because those three people are the ones who know what is best for that child in that moment. The thing is the courts have not raised that child. They don't know that child. The courts have no business saying anything about that child if, you know, they're going to be the ones who are making these final decisions. It's honestly, the one who needs to make the final decision should be the child's doctors and parents. And then the child should be, their child's opinion, I believe, should be added in on top of it. Because, you know, it is the child's life. It is their, you know, I believe that they have their own will. They have, you know, everything, and they have their own life. And the thing is if it's not one of those three people, the government doesn't need to be a part of it, because it's those three people's choices on what is going to lead and develop the rest of that child's life.
So you're talking about this, but let me make something clear before I continue. One, I have nothing against anyone who's transgender, gay, anybody who's part of the LGBTQ community. I have nothing against you. I'm gonna love you like Jesus loves me. We all have our stuff. There is nothing that you're going to do or say that's going to, you know, make me stop loving you in that way. Matter of fact, anyone who is going through his stuff, anyone who is part of that community, anyone who is, you know, just going through day-to-day lives and is dealing with any problems, they are always welcome in my church, because the church is a place for people to come, hear about God, and not be judged for who they are. And I believe, and I won't go down that road, because maybe we'll do a separate pastor rant on that. But I believe that's in times where we as a church fail, because people like this think we hate them. People like this think we don't, like, they don't experience the love of God, because people are so stuck in their traditionalist ways that we forget that these people need Jesus too. And I don't mean that, like, I don't mean that as to go against any of the teachings of the Bible, because I believe them all. I believe it is the word of God. I believe it is, we're supposed to follow it. However, there is not one person who is living today who can say they've followed everything that is in the Bible. It's just not part of it, and that's why Jesus died for our sins. Anyway, I'll continue to go on, because, again, I could go on forever. But all that to say, all that to set up that I have nothing against anybody who's doing something like this. I do have, my only issue is that I do think at times you have those parents who want to be their friend of their child and not the parent, right? So sometimes you see parents who will just let their kids run around with scissors and like stick it in the outlet, you know? And then their parents are like, did you die? Nope. Oh, you're good. You know?
Right. Well, that's the redneck way of parenting, you know, stick that fork in that damn there socket. And there you go. Zap, zap, zap. And you learn real quick.
Well, so I mean that in like the silliest way, but like, at some level, as a parent, you have to be willing to make hard decisions for your child.
Right.
And if it's telling them that you think it's best that they wait until they're 18 or wait until they can legally make that decision for themselves, like,
Well, and I don't have a problem with the parents, you know, talking with their children and making that decision and working with. And see, I even think when it comes down to it, if you really look at it, if you're talking medical professionals, if you're working with the doctor, if the parents, I think as a medical professional, they need to look at each situation too and say, look, okay, these parents might not be making the best decision. So before I do this, I want to send you to a psychologist to make sure that not only you, but your family are making the right decision and you are in the mental state that is right and correct for this. The thing is if you're working with the medical professionals, they've worked and studied this stuff and they know these the patterns and what is good for the people in these situations. I don't think the government should even get involved, but I'm glad that they're kind of making a ruling as far as what is legal consent.
But you see, so my issue is that, like, at times, and this is where again, we are going to always probably be different. You almost need that third party person who you can go back and blame for being the bad guy, right? And a lot of times that's the government. Like, the government does things for safety that people are like, well, why can't we do this? Why can't we shoot off fireworks in the city year round? Well, because somebody's house is going to catch fire and you're going to burn it up and you're going to have a lot more house fires. That's why they're willing to take that risk like a week a year. So shoot your fireworks off, unless you live in Missouri. Shoot your fireworks off and enjoy it the 1 week a year that you can have them and move on.
And stop even in the state of Iowa, where they're legal, you can't have them still.
Well, yeah. but my point is that sometimes we need the government to step in and be the bad guy. And I'm not saying that that's the right way to handle things all the time. What I am saying is that I disagree with you in the fact that you're saying the government needs to stay out of it. I think things like this, a lot of times the government needs to step in, needs to say, no, hold up. Is your child ready to make this decision? Because we both know, I've met a lot of people who would never be ready to make this decision at 16 years old. I know a lot of people, I would have never been ready to make that decision at 16 year old. Right? And people, if you are 16 years old, it's basic psychology. Your brain's not done developing.
Right. No, and I agree there. Not. Right. And I can agree with that. And that's why I say that it needs to be more. My issue is the problem is when government steps into things like this that says what you can put into your body. That's when I have an issue, because the thing is as long as I personally am not hurting anybody else, I believe that as long as I am not hurting anybody else, that they don't need to be involved in what I am doing. The thing is the second they get involved, they control every little thing. The second you give the government an inch, they take 10 miles.
I mean, so here's my thing. I don't know about all that. What I do know is, again, sometimes we need the government to be the boogeyman, and we're just unwilling to admit that we want to have that person in the background saying, you're going to be the boogeyman. It's exactly like speeding tickets, right? We all want to get away with speeding until somebody goes flying past us, and then you go, where was the cop when I needed him? Right?
No, that's when I hit the other pedal and try to go with them.
Well,
that's right. When you go into race car mode.
Yeah, your Blazer will do real well with that.
Oh no, my Blazer goes rattle, 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 boom! If I try to do that,
right? Crash, bang, bang! Right?
Yup, exactly. Except for it doesn't have a rumble seat. If you want to be on the back end of that thing, you is crazier than I am.
For everyone who got that, welcome to feeling old. Anyway, so while we're talking about the government, let's talk about the government's money. Mainly the fact that there might be a new stimulus bill coming.
Yeah, but don't get your hopes up if you're hoping for that $1,200.
Well, I'll let you talk about that in a second, because I've been going on and on, and I apologize. But all that to say, there might be a stimulus bill coming. It might actually be, last week we went on a little bit about how the two-party system is not working for our, country anymore, but it does seem like, at least in the House, people are willing to put aside their differences and come together, get a stimulus bill made that everyone can agree on and get help to the American people, which I thought was a really cool note to, especially after that, last story where it was a little more intense, but you know, I thought this was really cool. I'm hoping that they can do a lot of this. I'm hoping for to see more of those loans to help small businesses. I'm hoping to see a lot more just benefits like that. It'll be interesting to see what it actually goes through. And I know you want to talk some about that, because I saw got an article about it too. So I will happily let you finish that conversation. So
yeah. So with the stimulus bill, it's not that that they're not looking at passing it, and actually, even they're looking pretty bipartisan support in the Senate now, because you know they're realizing that some of these small businesses that they shut down in the beginning are needing some of this help because they're struggling to survive. However, for the day-to-day person, don't be expecting that $1,200. At least they're saying not in this specific bill. I was reading an article here, and they're talking that probably that specific legislation won't come out until 2021. We're looking towards the middle of this next year if we're looking at another $1,200 stimulus as far as like a nationwide direct payment stimulus. As far as the rest of that I want to say the whole bill is $908 billion that they're looking at doing COVID relief aid. This is just the basic package looking at directly dealing with like the small business loans and stuff like that. Which, you know, I'm all for getting some of these people some of the money to be able to help them, you know, survive and pay their employees and, you know, doing the payment protection plans like they're talking with some of those where they're looking at adding in the different, you know, business loans, and they're forgivable business loans too. My only concern is with all of this is that I hope that they're sending these to the small businesses that truly need them. And some of their big cronies that are in there lobbying to them aren't getting some of this.
Yeah. So I actually saw something that was interesting today that one of the initial stimulus bill with what are they, PPAs or whatever.
I think they're PPPs.
PPPs. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Personal. Something anyway, but I saw something today that popped up. As you know, we're big football fans, but Tom Brady's company actually received one of these in the beginning, and then shortly after, he ended up buying like a $90 million boat or something like that.
And so that's like, the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, so got to be honest, not a Tom Brady fan at all. But like things like that make it even worse because like, okay, was his company like building? I don't know what his company was. I just saw the brief article. And it could be something that's completely made up. He could have had that boat well before it, but you know, the article made it seem like it was pretty much like he got this loan and then he bought a boat. Tom Brady makes millions upon millions of dollars playing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But if you're going to take that kind of money for your business, like especially take it out of the mouths of, you know, like of families who could have needed it. Right.
Well, yeah. So, look at the bar and the restaurant industry that is just struggling because they can't do anything. Because if you look at like the bar industry, for instance, they don't make their money on takeout food. They make their money on the drinks that they get you to drink while you're sitting there eating.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, like most restaurants make their most money from those kind of things. They make the money from you coming in and buying the $3 soda that's only going to cost them 20 cents, even if you drink the whole syrup. You know, that's an over-exaggeration, but they make their money by you coming in and sitting there and buying things repeatedly and then sitting there going, you know what, I'm not quite full. I'll take dessert now. If you order stuff, these companies just don't have the chance of doing that. And it kills me just to see the fact that you have people doing stuff like that. It's not just Tom Brady. There's a lot of people who did stuff like that.
Right.
These big companies got these loans that should have been given to these small mom and pop shops that aren't going to make it through this pandemic. Like, I'd be curious to see what the statistics are like nationally of businesses that would have had to close because of just the inability to continue to run their there's stores and restaurants and stuff.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's the whole thing is like when you look into this, like I'm all for giving this money to the small businesses that it can help them, you know, extend out. So maybe they aren't able to pay out of their profits this month because they didn't have the foot traffic. So they're able to still pay these employees and keep their lights on and keep their doors open and still be a staple in their towns. You know, I'm one of these people who are a big proponent for shopping locally. If I can find something that is locally made to me and I can go purchase it from the person who's making it right there near me, I'm going to do that 9 times out of 10 before I'm going to go to one of these big box stores. Because I would much rather support 100%. The local. And the thing is if this stimulus isn't going to that, it's going to frustrate the ever-living crap out of me.
Well, I think it's going to frustrate everyone. Everyone's tired of, at this point, of companies who have money, could very well make it through this without, you know, without these, taking these loans from people who truly need them. And like, I think of like, we have a local grocery store here in town where, I recently remembered like, hey, these guys are awesome. And I say that because like, yeah, they may be a little more expensive, but let me tell you, I don't have to deal with the same kind of traffic and the same kind of people who are out at, I won't say the company's name, but you all know who I'm talking about.
Big Blue Box.
That's right. But in all seriousness, I don't have to deal with the crazy lines. I don't have to deal with checking myself out. I don't have to deal with the craziness. Now, again, that company is great and great for its other things, but like your mom and pop shops are going to, your mom and pop or your locally owned grocery stores, locally owned restaurants are going to be more invested in your community, right? I think of this grocery store I'm talking about just donated like 1,000 things of mac and cheese to my food pantry in my church, you know, like.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, and that's the thing is if you can support local and help local, the local is going to support you. And see, and that's one reason I definitely believe in volunteerism. I believe that if you volunteer and help your fellow man is going to help you. I think that God just wired us that way that, you know, we're definitely going to be a little, as far as that goes, we're definitely, you know, we need to make sure we're helping everybody that we can. I mean, you might not be able to financially do it, but it's definitely something you can help. So one thing I definitely, the one thing that we were talking about bipartisan things in the, I'm just going to touch on this because it's one that I definitely wanted to talk about. And we'll see what the Senate does. But the MORE Act was in the House as well. That was coming. We were just talking about the stimulus bill. But they also, on that same docket, they were talking about the MORE Act as well, which is for marijuana decriminalization.
Decriminalization.
That's a hard word to say. But they're looking at deschedulizing marijuana from the Schedule One, and they're going to take it from Schedule One off of the list altogether. And they're also looking at adding, letting the states decide what their regulations are going to look like. They also added a 5% tax on, which will be a federal tax on it, to that will go directly to affect the communities of those affected by the war on drugs, the federal war on drugs, specifically looking at some of the communities that have been arrested and put in jail and stuff, in prison and stuff, dealing directly with cannabis prohibition. With this, however, it's looking like, once it gets over to the Senate, Mitch McConnell has been known to shut any bill like this down. Mitch McConnell wants nothing to do with nothing that ain't Mitch McConnell's idea.
So I can't speak to that. What I can say is that it's an interesting take, right? So I live in a state where recreational marijuana is legal currently. And I have several employees. Matter of fact, I have several employees who are not members of our church. which is good, especially when you're trying to, it's good and it's bad, you know, depending on the circumstances. Mm-hmm. But all that to say, here's my honest opinion of the whole thing. I would say it exactly as I would to my employees. Don't be stupid with it.
Right.
It's legal. There's absolutely nothing I can do about it. If you want to do mm-hmm. it on your own time, that's fine. If you come to work high, you're going home.
Right. Well, I think it should be just like alcohol. I mean, we don't allow people to come to work drunk. I mean, if you're going,
right.
I'm not saying that, you know, there aren't people who can be functioning alcoholics or functioning stoners, but I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm not saying that it's, you know, a great thing to be somebody who is a functioning alcoholic who literally I wake up and start drinking every moment of the day. And I'm not saying that anything can be abused. That's the thing, is you can abuse anything, but I'm saying within moderation. And I mean, my whole thing is I mean, we know each other with this situation as far as our personal feelings. I'm all for this, you know, and I'm all for the getting the government to loosen up these regulations that have adversely affected people more than they've actually helped. All they've done mm-hmm. is criminalized people versus helping people. And the thing is there's studies out now. We've had enough research into this that it is not this, you know, reefer madness of the 40s and 50s. And it's gonna, you know, everybody, it's the devil's lettuce. It's gonna kill everybody, blah, 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 blah. We're not there. It's not a thing. We have the research behind it. Let's stop being stuck in the 40s, 50s with reefer madness, and let's just get Mitch McConnell on the page and get the Senate on the page to go through this. You know, the thing is if you look in the House, the Democrats, and guess what? Our one libertarian seat that libertarians had voted yes on this, even though people kind of gave him crap because of the side of things with the taxes, but whatever. You know, and that I'm just really hoping that with this, that the people who are affected by this, that were poorly affected and, you know, jailed for, you know, 20, 30 years because mm-hmm. of this and lost portions of their lives because of selling and obtaining a plant or consuming a plant that, in my opinion, God put on this earth. You don't have to do anything but dry it and smoke it. And the thing is, you know, we have endocannabinoid system in our body. So why didn't God put it on this earth? God made everything on this planet. So why not use it? And if we use it responsibly, there should be no issues with it.
So I agree that God made everything on this earth. I will say, you also have to remember the hemp plant also has a lot of other very useful ways of being, has very many ways of being useful, right?
Oh, exactly.
You can make a lot of things out of it. Do I think, would I ever smoke marijuana? Absolutely not. Never. I just don't think so. I don't even drink alcohol. Like, right. It's not something I want to do. One, because, you know, we have a family history of, having a little bit of alcohol abuse. So I don't want to go down that road personally. As well as, honestly, when I did try alcohol, I didn't even like the taste of it. Like, I think I liked like one thing, which was like a hard cider, and you made fun of me for. So, but all that to say that, like, the grand scheme of things is that if you just don't do stupid things to your body, right?
Right.
Know your limits. Know what's going on. Now, I don't support. Do I think people who have smoked weed or have sold this deserve to be in jail for like 90 years? No, because we're keeping people out of jail who, like, legitimately need to be there, right? And I mean the whole jails and those systems.
Lord. Yeah,
we can get into that another time because they're clearly. Clearly, the correctional system is not working how it should, or she's not working with the intended purpose of it, right?
Right.
But all that to say, don't be stupid. Know your limits. Take care of the body God gave you. And coming back to the last one, don't be stupid.
Right. I'm laughing because I just, we were talking and you said you wanted me to blind react to the Oh Florida Man moment because we're starting to get towards the end of our time frame here. And so, because we got on that subject, I just figured since it ties in really well with that subject, I saw your title. I was like, I'm going to open this up now.
Let's jump right into that. So now it's time for Oh Florida, the Florida Man moment. And this one made me laugh. Like, I'm in my office literally trying not to like have my staff come in and ask me what's going on. Because I'm reading this, and this gentleman in Florida was arrested on charges of distribution of a controlled substance or marijuana. That's not the stupid part. The stupid part is when he was asked why he did it, he told the sheriff, he's in St. Petersburg, downtown St. Petersburg. I don't know. I've not been there. But he told the sheriff who arrested him that he was handing it out because it was Christmas time.
I mean, he's showing some good cheer. He just wants everybody to be really happy.
Oh, let me tell you.
I mean, that stuff is expensive, man. Like, to be just passing it out like that, like, are you kidding me? Like, there's, holy cow, like, just passing out a little bit. Just, here you go, homie. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go. Right. Have some Christmas cheer. Christmas cheer. Was that his strain that he was growing? Was his strain called Christmas cheer? So he was trying to promote his new strain he grew? You know, that's definitely an old Florida Man moment. That only in Florida.
Yeah. Well, I was reading this and I was like, well, you know, there would have been a lot better ways to spread Christmas cheer, but I mean, you know, at least he's trying to do his part. The bright side of this story is he was just trying to spread some Christmas cheer. Maybe he went around about it the wrong way, like, you know, tailing into our last story, whether you think that's a good thing or not. It's still illegal there, so follow the laws. Even if you think you're spreading Christmas cheer, don't give grandma a blunt for Christmas.
I mean, unless you're in a legal state where you can legally gift a blunt to grandma. I mean, grandma might like that blunt you're gifting her. You never know, grandma might be wilding out over there. You know, it's that's definitely a good one. You know, and I'm not gonna dig too crazy much into my conspiracy corner because I got some crazy conspiracy stuff going on here. I'm telling you, like, my redneck conspiracy corner this week, you know, we got this Utah monolith. So in Utah there was this they call it, it's a wildlife management area, essentially. They call it BLM. It's the something management for their area. And they were flying over in a helicopter. And as they're flying in this helicopter, they saw the pilots were, I wish I could make this up, but they were counting sheep. They were literally out there counting bighorn sheep. So as they're counting the sheep, they saw this monolith. It was just this random silver giant thing sticking up out of the ground. And they're like, okay. And so they're like, they looked back and they flew back to see, because the one pilot says, turn back around. We need to go see this. And they found it. And so there's been a bunch of people who've gone out there and sought it out and stuff to find it. And, you know, the Utah Wildlife company there that's dealing, their agency dealing specifically with this was saying, you know, don't go out there because, you know, people can be out. It is a kind of a dangerous trek out there where it was at.
Yeah.
Well, then now there's been a bunch of these monoliths popping up all over the world. There's been a few of them that have been clearly faked. Like, you can tell it's people trying to get the attention and the publicity attention and stuff. But there's a few of them that have looked really similar. And now the one in Utah has disappeared. And now there's supposedly these guys who have said that they are the ones behind it disappearing and stuff, because they're saying that Leave No Trace is their whole thing. And they're talking about the legalities behind this. And I'm telling you, man, this whole thing is aliens. It's all aliens.
For that. So what you're saying, now, what exactly is this monolith?
It's literally just this giant, shiny triangle-shaped thing sticking up out of the ground. It's that's all it is.
So what you're saying is that aliens are coming down to Earth to put up giant, shiny triangle things and then leave.
I mean, I don't know why they're putting them here. I don't know if they're just appearing. If these were their, you know, they could be their COVID spreaders. I mean, I'm just throwing out conspiracies here, man. This, you know, the aliens started COVID. You know it. You know. I'm telling you, it's that redneck conspiracy part to me, man.
Are they Thanos? They're going to snap their fingers and half the world's going to be...
I mean, potentially. We don't know. I haven't found out what these aliens are yet or anything like that. I'm telling you, I'm going to have to do more research into this conspiracy, because I still need to do more research into why they're bringing them here. But
it's mind control. That's exactly what it is.
That could be it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. I don't even know. The only thing I can think of right now is that the meme with the guy with crazy hair going aliens.
Right.
Oh man, that's an interesting theory. All that to say, we're gonna go into our last story. We want to end on a high note here. Not that aliens aren't a high note, redneck. Just you know. End on something a little different. I'm going to go into this week's Saving Humanity moment. And this one just struck me as really cool. There was this couple who was going to get married in Chicago. And because of COVID, they ended up doing what a lot of people, I'm sure, would not love to do with their Chicago. They ended up not do with their wedding, especially with all the beauty and all the stuff that you can find in Chicago. That's what I was trying to say, and, you know, words are hard today. But this couple ended up, instead of throwing this big, extravagant wedding, doing a courthouse wedding. And they had a lot of things that they, put deposits on. They put, on things like they bought a dress. They put a non-refundable deposit on their venue and their catering and all that. The venue was really cool. They were able to just essentially donate that towards towards a charity event that was going to be happening at the venue at a later date. So all that money is going to go to cover some of their costs, which is really cool to me. And the other thing they did with their catering from their wedding, they had a 150-person guest list, but they took that, all this money that they probably spent on this extravagant meal, and they turned it into 200 box Thanksgiving dinners for families across Chicago.
That's awesome.
Which, to me, is just what? Like, how better can you make a bad situation? Like, how can you make, like, the situation better, you know? Like, they just stepped up and, like, they are in a bad situation, and they decided that they were going to take their bad situation that they were in and turn it into something that can be positive. And that's awesome. Kudos to you guys. That's just amazing what you do. I know a lot of people in Chicago probably had, their choice of Thanksgiving dinners, but the fact that you wanted to step up and help those who are overlooked so often is just amazing. So kudos to you.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. Just seeing that people can step up and take the kindness of their heart. That's that volunteerism that I was talking about in action. Even though something terrible was going on with my life, I was able to bless somebody else's life with what was going on. Even though I was in a bad situation, I was able to make the best out of what was going on. That's awesome. And I have to give very good kudos to them, because giving people a Thanksgiving meal is even just that much more. Like, being able to feed people a hot meal, like, even though you were in a terrible situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with that being said, we want to thank everyone for listening. If you have any stories that you'd like us to cover, if you have anything that you would like the redneck to work up for his next conspiracy moment, let us know. Reach out to us at redneckpastorpodcast@gmail.com. Redneck, where can they find us?
Yeah, they can find us. We are on all of the pretty much major podcasting platforms. We use Anchor FM as our hosting. We have switched to them because they definitely have been a good host for us to move over to, and they've distributed us out to all of their big ones. You can also like us on Facebook. Unfortunately, our name on Facebook is a little weird. It's r.n instead of saying redneck, because apparently Facebook doesn't like me. They don't like the word redneck. That's why it's r.n on there. So if you're trying to find us on Facebook, if you go to anchor.fm and find us on Anchor, it will take you directly to our Facebook page as well.
Yeah, so find us on Facebook, email us your requests for stories to cover, or correct us if we've been wrong. But we'd love to hear from you. And this is the pastor saying good night.
Night, y'all.